It's Royal Ascot Week and you join us for a very special episode of the Racing Postcast brought to you by Tote Fantasy. My name's Sam Hart, looking forward to previewing the opening 4 days of the Royal Meeting. Panel this week is an excellent one. We're actually in the studio recording today's audio, which is fantastic. Get some live reactions from the guys. But we've got Robbie Wilder sitting next to me. I've got Jamie Benson on the far end and Chris Cook via Skype. Jamie, Tote Fantasy Games going to be absolutely massive this week. Tell all of our listeners what's going on.
Yeah, so there are loads of offers going on. We've got one for all fantasy players, which is play 3 of the first 4 days. You can play more, you can play all 4 if you like, but you get the Saturday free. So basically just rewards people for having a go throughout the week, which is great value. And actually in terms of offers, you know, you play £21, you get a £7 free. You know, it's pretty good going. But the main one that I'm really excited about is the Racing Post League is doing a... Rather than doing Beat Benson in the tournaments, we're doing a sort of, I don't know what it would be, Kipper Keels and Do DJ. But basically, the Racing Post lads will be entering a stable each. And if you beat both of them, both DJ and Paul Keeley, you will get a free stable every single day. So all you need to do is just enter your stables, your fantasy stables, join the Racing Post League, and you will be automatically entered to win that free prize. So it's going to be great fun. I mean, certainly it feels like it's easier to beat me than it is to beat them, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of free bets going about. So yeah, no, it's going to be great crack, and that's every day of Royal Ascot as well. So even if you miss the Tuesday, you can kick on and enjoy it for the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's so worth doing. £7 play each day. Build your team, pick your stable, have your stable star, your steward's inquiry horse, and get yourself in the Racing Post Private League. We'll be talking about all of the game and kind of the concepts of it during the show. And like Jamie says, you can take on Paul Keeley and David Jennings every day in the Private League. Play 3 of the first 4 days and you'll get Saturday's stable for free. And because we're covering the main races during this preview from the first 4 days, you'll find our Tote Fantasy team for each day on the Tote Fantasy Twitter page at Tote Fantasy. Do go and check that out. And you'll see who we're putting up for each day. And a special offer for Members Club. Listeners of the Racing Postcast can win a 1-year ultimate subscription to the Racing Post Members Club worth £399. You'll get 365 days free access of the Racing Post digital newspaper, award-winning online journalism, and daily tipping services, and much more. To be in with a chance of winning, just click the link in the description and fill in the entry form. Terms and conditions apply. See the competition for full details. Let's rock and roll then. Kick off with the opening day on Tuesday. And we start with the Queen Anne Stakes, a mile, 2:30 on Tuesday, and it is a Group 1 event. And Spiral and Modern Games top the market at 2-1. Native Trail, 13-2. Chindit, 14-1, Moot Sarbex 18-1, and 25-1, and bigger the rest. Chris Cook, I'll go to you first. I'm guessing you're going to be at Ascot for the whole week. Are you looking forward to this week?
Oh yeah, no, I absolutely love it. In fact, I've said a couple of times, it's kind of taking over as my sort of favourite race meeting, because you can just always rely on that depth of competition. And you know, I'm a guy who sort of prefers to sort of try and get a big price winner if I can. You know, there's lots of guys who feel the same way. And you know, Royal Ascot, you always feel that there's enough of those kicking around where you have a chance of hitting one, you know, because as I say, there's lots of interesting horses in every race, and some of them go overlooked, whereas these days I sort of feel at Cheltenham, the winning prices are starting to come down. You know, the races are, some of them are starting to thin out a little bit. I think there's some action needs taken there to sort of shore up the competition levels to how they used to be, but I mean, it's a great week, isn't it? And it's great fun to have all these international raiders, international jockeys adding a bit of colour, even if it does make it trickier for us.
Absolutely. And looking at the top of the market for the Queen Anne, Chris, in Spiral Modern Games, 2-1 joint favourites. Do you think it revolves around the top of the market? Or you said you'd like to find a price. Have you got one in here?
Well, I do. I've got a few through the week. This one is sort of the one I'm not so absolutely certain about, but I think Cash is interesting, a sort of 20-1, 25-1. He was in the Brigadier Gerard last time, which I think is going to be remembered by the end of the year as sort of one of the great races of the season. That was Hookham coming to nail Desert Crown. And so Cash was in that, and his part's kind of forgotten because he baited into fourth. A mile and a quarter is just a bit far for a horse like him that races so exuberantly. But he was right there until about, I don't know, 300 yards from the line, maybe a furlong out. You know, Desert Crown eventually sort of goes past him, outstays him, and then Hookham charges. But, you know, if you sort of stop the race after about the mile, he's right there with some top quality horses. He's a bit of a ball of fire, and, you know, that's going to be a risk again. He's got a new jockey, Tom Marquins, on board. This is one of the reasons why I think he's sort of being slightly overlooked in the market, because Dave Simcott's got two in there, and Jamie Spencer has gone the other way with light infantry. But I think that one could have done with more rain. Cash is helped by a dry surface. And I think he's still got more upside than people have realised. All that being said, I mean, he's really an each-way play. Modern Games, you know, convinces me, I think, as the most likely winner. And I'm just not sure about Inspiral. I mean, a short price like that, obviously she's a brilliant filly, but she's not completely reliable, is she? I think she'd be better on a round mile than a straight mile.
Yeah, well, 25-1 cash for Chris there as an each-way play. Robbie Wilders, great to actually have you in the studio with myself. How's the tipping guest? What's it, How's that been the last week?
It's all right, mate. I'm a bit knackered. I had to preview every race at Royal Ascot. 35 races this weekend, give a selection. And doing that in the middle of my flatmate's 30th. So, yeah, we're a bit tired. But I do feel very well prepared. And in terms of the Queen Anne, I'll tell you, Modern Games probably doesn't get quite the respect he deserves. I mean, since he chased on Bayard in the Sussex Stakes, his form figures in Group 1s, Grade 1s is 1-2, 1-2, 1. He's just a very good horse, but he's obviously not a Bayard who won this last year. The Mile Division's crying out for one to really come through. In Spiral, I mean, the fact that we've not seen her this season isn't really a concern, because her best performance last season came first time out here in the Coronation Stakes. But at the same time, I think I'd probably, like the guys, look for one at a bit of a price. And I'm quite keen on Triple Time to run well. I'm a big fan of The Dam. He's a Frankel colt. He's out of Ream 3, who's probably one of the best broodmares in the business. Produced sort of about 6 or 7 proper Group 2 horses. And we've not seen much of this guy, but he has looked good so far. I think he's just the sort of horse that could take a big step forward this season. When you saw him twice last season, I think he found the ground a bit too soft in the pre-Daniel Wildenstein. He was quite short for that. But before that, he looked a potential Group 1 performer at Haydock when he completely bolted up. He's about 33-1. Four places, he'd be the way I was looking.
Yeah, Triple Time, another each-way shout there from Robbie. But both Chris and Robbie seem in agreement that Modern Games might be one of the ones to beat, and a very consistent horse at the top, 2-1. Mr. Benson, what kind of cost of our 10,000 guineas budget at the two at the top of the market roughly going to cost us on the Tuesday?
Yeah, we'll have to wait until the prices come out, but I imagine there'll probably be 2,500 guineas the pair. So you'll have to spend at least a quarter of your budget. One of them, if they see a bit of a support between now and then, might even come into being more like 3,750. So this could be a fair whack of your budget, unless you do go for something at a bit of a price, like Cash or Triple Time. I mean, I would be tempted by Inspiral in my fantasy stable here. The only hesitation would be the fact that she could just blow out if she isn't right and doesn't handle it. I think her ceiling is probably higher than Modern Games is, although that's slightly damning with faint praise to the point that Robbie made about people just seemingly just not quite giving him the credit he deserves. But Inspiral will be my selection at the top of the market, and then very much like Robbie though, Triple Time at those bigger prices, which would free up some budget for other selections later in the card. So also I'm also a massive fan of The Dam. I still can't quite believe that Third Realm never quite kicked on to become the horse I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to win the Derby. So yeah, no, Triple Time might be my way back into that Dam's line. So yeah, Triple Time and Inspiral probably
my
two.
I quite like Triple Time each way as well, so that could be one that could end up in our stable and shouldn't cost us too much of our budget. Let's move on to the 305 then, which is the Coventry Stakes, the first two-year-old race we're going to look at. It's a Group 2 event over 6 furlongs. The current market looks like River Tyra is the 15-8 favourite. Sadler is 100-30. Gimme the Beat Boys is 4-1. Big jump then to Army Ethos and Buccaneer Fuerte at 16-1, along with the American Raider Fandom and 20-1. Bar these. Robbie Wilders, River Tiber versus a Sadner. Time, sectional, visuals, form. What have you gone on here?
Yeah, I'm not looking at the top two. I just don't like big... I don't know, I'll tell you, a short price in a big field juvenile race is 22 runners. You can certainly knock a Sadner's ripping form as well. Well, I mean, in that only one horse has won since, but finished 8th of 12 in the Woodcourt Epsom. So we don't know really what he beat there at all. I mean, he did it really well. I mean, he obviously could win. River Tiber, I just think he's sort of too short really on what he's achieved. I'm not sure the Nace form's worked out too well. He's definitely been better over 6 furlongs for sure, but whether he wants a bit of softer ground, I'm not sure. The way I was looking was the Richard Fahey horse, Emperor's Son. Fahey's just very good in these juvenile races. He's saddled the last two winners of the Norfolk This horse gave the impression at Carlisle, which is a stiff five, that he'd be better over six. He was basically hampered at the start when winning on his debut, and I thought he did really well to get up that day. So he's the one. It is a race for kind of flies, really, because you're talking about horses with generally only one run to their name. And I tend to sort of look for the sort of key stables in this sort of race. So 20-1 Emperor's Son would be the way I was looking each way.
Yeah, it's one for each way players. You've got plenty of unbeaten horses in here who could improve plenty. Chris, there's some cracking two-year-old races throughout the week, and the Coventry certainly one of them.
Yeah, I did a little assessment at the end of last week in Front Runners, the sort of morning newsletter I do for Racing Post subscribers. I'd tried to rank all the group races at Royal Ascot in order of predictability, you know, just looking at how many double-figure SPs had won the race, each race over the past 10 years or so, and you know, the fate of the favourites, that kind of thing. No surprise, really, the two-year-old races, the Coventry, the Albany, the Norfolk, they came right at the bottom. We know so little about these horses, don't we, before they line up, and quite often they're tackling completely new conditions. You know, you look at River Tiber, who's a horse of undoubted quality, but a big field over six furlongs on quick ground is just nothing like what he's been doing. Bobsley was the one that sort of I thought might be interesting at sort of 16-1, maybe a bit bigger. Quite a professional display in the woodcut, and you could see, you know, he was going to win that from a fair way out. The jockey sort of produced his whip in his right hand, and as a result, the horse kind of wandered down the camber in the closing stages. But I think if he kept both hands on the reins instead and just pushed out, he'd probably, you know, the horse would probably have kept straight and maybe won a bit more impressively. He's got a nice bit of scope to him, Bobsley. I think he's sort of sailing under the radar a little bit.
Okay, Woodcut Stakes winner Bobsley at 20-1 currently for Chris. Jamie, will the river be flowing on day one?
I think this is going to be one of the most anticlimactic moments on racing Twitter ever, as both these horses get beaten by something. Mm. It could be amazing. Both the Sectional Easters and the Aidan O'Brien Say What You See Is would be absolutely tearing up their slips if the likes of Bobsley came by them. I mean, I'm with the team on slightly taking a flyer on one. There's just so little form to go on. If I was to be siding, it would be with River Tiber, who I think would have learnt a lot from being out over five last time. But the one I would be siding with at the price would be Hartem, who was third behind Bobsley in the Woodcut. He was slightly away that day. He was a notable eye catcher. He went off Fav. He's clearly a precocious two-year-old. And I think you could argue that he was valued to be a lot closer, if not maybe have won the race, with more luck in running. And he will have a bit more time to sort himself out over six at Ascot versus six at York. So Hartem for me at double the price of Bobsley, 40-1 could be an interesting play.
There we go, some each way plays once again in the Coventry, some big prices. Let's move on to the 340, which is the King's Stand Stakes. This is a 5 furlong sprint, and the current market: Highfield Princess 5-2, Coolangatta, the Australian Raider, is 9-2, Manakan 5-1, Dramatised is 7-1, Cannonball is 12-1, 18-1, and bigger the rest. Get your Australian form books out here. Chris, when you have some of these Australian sprints in these races, especially after what Nature Strip did last year, would you rather leave this race alone, or is it something that you're keen to get stuck into?
It's always been a tricky race for me. There was a time, I think, when you could just go with whatever the obvious Aussie sprinter was, couldn't you? I mean, they were sort of unstoppable for a few years in a row, in my memory anyway. And then they had a bit of a drought until last year. I like Highfield Princess. You know, I think she's entitled to be fav. Probably, you know, needed the run in the Duke of York, and I think she sort of run into quite a good improving sprinter that day. I was a bit worried about the stable form, and then John Quinn started getting some winners at the end of last week. So, I mean, I'm sort of thinking and hoping and expecting that she'll come good, but I don't think you could make much of a case for 5-2 being a value price, with there being so many imponderables. And, you know, we know what these sprints are like. It just takes the sort of tiniest thing to go a little bit wrong, and then you're in big trouble.
Absolutely. Robbie, Highfield Princess, Chris has mentioned her there and put her up, but do you think she's the kind of horse that could end up winning this and then doing the double and trying to win on Saturday?
Yeah, I was talking about that actually last week. I'd love to see it done. I mean, Blue Point's obviously done it in recent years, and Schwassier for the Aussies back in the day. I put Highfield Princess up for this about 6 weeks ago. I think she's the best horse in the race. That York combat was just excellent, really. It shows that she could be even better at six, which is remarkable considering how much improvement she made last season. I think she can be better over the five furlongs. I think she's very speedy and she does stay a bit further, which doesn't hurt on the straight track at Ascot. I don't really like the Aussies this year. Basically, the weight for age international scale, like the nuance to it, means that they're not really, these three-year-olds aren't well suited by the conditions of the race. Like Kulangata, the filly, is racing off the same weight as Highfall Princess, who's six, she's three. And Cannonball is racing off the same weight as the eight-year-old Nate Strip was last year. So I don't think it's really in their favour. One at a price I think could go well is Mitt Bahi. He was fifth in the Temple Stakes, but there was obviously a golden highway at Haydock that day. He had to be drawn high. The first four home were from 10 to 14. Mitt Bahi was in three. He was the horse taker at that for me, and he's about 25 to 1. So it'd be one for place pot players.
Okay, Highfield Princess, yeah, I think 5-2 is a really fair price. Mitt Bahi could be one each way. Looking at the race, Jamie, this is a massive race for the Whirlpool, isn't it? How are you going to be playing this one?
Yeah, love the place pop plug there from Robbie.
That's what we've done once.
So Chris made a really good point here about over five furlongs. Only a very small thing has to go wrong for you to be way out of the picture, which is slightly challenging because I really like Highfield Princess and she would make a lot of appeal as a stable star because you get the bonus points for a bigger field. And you can see her being head and shoulders above these, I would say. It's tough. Mitt Bahi has been slightly the shrewdies pick because of being on that wrong side at Haydock and would probably be my idea in each way price, especially given that if they go off too fast, he will be there closing at the finish at this staying five furlongs. So I wouldn't really have too much in the way of strong opinion or notable insight other than to say I'll probably be playing Mitt Bahi each way and ultimately stable starring Highfield Princess. To go and land it.
I was just going to say, I think one of the strangest prices of the week is Manicarn at 5-1.
Been well supported. Like,
normally, that's the sort of dark horse you'd be looking at sort of 12-14. So I don't really get that at all.
Dude, I mean, there has been a lot of money on the opening day already for all of Frankie's
rides. Sure, yeah, it's obviously the Frankie factor, isn't it? But I just thought that was interesting. It's way too short on what he's done.
Yeah, well, look, the full postcast panel all with Highfield Princess and a stable star for Jamie as well. So I think we will be playing that as our stable star come Tuesday. Let's move on to the final race we look at on the Tuesday, which is the 4:20, the St James's Palace Stakes, a Group 1 over a mile for the 3-year-olds. And Chaldean is the 9-4 favourite. Paddington 5-2. Cicero's Gift is 5-1. Mustabshire is 9-1. 10-1 about Isaac Shelby. 14-1 Royal Scotsman. 40-1 and bigger the rest. Personally, I think this is the race of the week. English Guineas form, Irish Guineas form, French Guineas form, all being tested. A rompant York winner as well. Where do we go with this one, Chris?
So as you say, it's a fascinating race and hopefully it'll be such fun to watch. I think the ground is crucial. We haven't really talked about the weather. I see there's still that very respected Norwegian weather forecasting website. It's got like 11 mils of rain coming for Ascot tomorrow morning. But they've been forecasting a ton of rain over the last few days there and it hasn't really shown up. So I'm kind of banking on it still being quick ground for basically the whole week. And so that you know, that points kind of away from Chaldean, doesn't it? And Isaac Shelby, and towards a horse like Paddington, who I'd say is the most likely winner. 2-1, actually, not a bad price. But there's a horse in this that I think has got the biggest gap of the whole week between what his price should be and what it actually is, which is Indestructible, the Craven winner. I mean, he's mostly 33s. I think there's even a bit of 40s, maybe a 50s around somewhere. It's, you know, it's an each way play because, you know, you wouldn't be sure that he's going to outlast a horse like Paddington. And it's a tricky draw. I wish he wasn't in 9 out of 9, considering he's probably going to try and go forwards, you know, like he did in the Craven. But people just put a line through him, haven't they? Because he ran really poorly in the Guineas, but soft ground that weekend. And it just wasn't for him. It didn't work out. Fast ground mile round a bend really might work out quite well for him. And I feel sure that he's going to run above his odds. He might not quite be good enough. But he's a better horse this year than he was last year. He was pretty good last year. So I've got my fingers crossed for a big run from him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The Craven winner beat the Foxes and also beat Mustabshire, who's what, five times shorter than him in the market currently in the Craven.
Robbie,
which are the three guineas that I've mentioned at the top of the, when I was going through the market, which are the three do you think was actually the strongest?
I don't know, it's hard to say. My fancy is Paddington. I thought he did it well in the Irish Guineas. He's been winning slowly run races as well. And I feel like a proper end-to-end gallop could sort of see and go to the next level. He reminds me a bit of St. Mark's Basilica a couple of years ago. I could just see there being a bit of pace on here with Mustabshire going forward, Isaac Shelby, potentially Indestructible. I just don't think we've seen the best of him. I think he's a proper top-class horse. So he's the way I'm looking. But yeah, it's fascinating. It'd be interesting to see how good Cicero's Gift is because, again, he'd be sort of one of those you'd be looking at as a kind of dark horse angle, but he has been well backed recently. But I think Paddington is the solid one.
Yeah, no, I think so as well. Jamie, I'd imagine there's a fair chunk of our Tote Fantasy budget if you do want to go towards the top of the market here. Probably similar sort of 2,500 guineas about the two at the top, would you say?
Yeah, very similar makeup to the Queen Anne, where you would be 2,500, the pair at the top, of which I'd probably prefer to be with Paddington, but only marginally. I'm quite happy to let them both run at those prices and just to see whose form is the best, because they are so markedly different. The one I'm probably going to have a small punt on, who's currently about 14-1, is Royal Scotsman. Obviously, his run in Irish 2000 was too bad to be true and bitterly disappointing. I really thought he'd go and win that, having been so free in the Guineas and then stayed on all down the wrong side and all this kind of stuff. So everything looked to have been set up for a massive run in the Irish 2000. I'm willing to forgive him that. And if you do, I think 14-1 is a massive, massive price about Royal Scotsman. So I'll be having a small punt on that, although I do like the Indestructible form line. It's a very similar sort of argument to the Royal Scotsman one, in that if you ignore one run, you then get some very high quality form. So I think I'm happy enough to punt personally away from the top of the market, but you're probably picking one of Chaldean or Paddington for your Tote Fantasy stable.
It's absolutely fascinating, this race. You make a case for quite a few in here. And with Chaldean, this horse, Robbie, is essentially unbeaten, really, if we take away the unseated Newbury. What are the concerns we have around him?
It's quite hard to put your finger on, really, isn't it? Because he's a bit of a modern game, so he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean, the weight of money behind him in the 2,000 guineas was quite crazy, really. He was completely backed off the boards beforehand. I don't know. Again, like you could just see him winning, but I'm sort of trying to look for one that is properly top. He is top class, but proper like a dominant force in the division. And I just think Paddington could be that rather than Chaldean.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Let's go on to day two, start with the Wednesday now with the opening race there, which is the Queen Mary Stakes, a Group 2 for the two-year-old fillies this time around. And at the time of recording this, we're just getting the declarations through. The actual markets that I've got here will be probably not up to date at the moment, but Born to Rock's the 9-2 favourite, Beautiful Diamond 5-1, Got to Love a Grey, Midnight Affair are 10s. Bunshin is 12-1 along with Crimson Advocate and 14-1 and Bigger the Rest in here. The two-year-old fillies take centre stage on the opener on Wednesday, Robbie. Who do we like in what's an open contest?
Yeah, it is wide open, isn't it? We're going about 9-2 the field. Yeah. It's going to be a stab in the dark job, but again, the way I like to look at these races is with trainers who are decent with juveniles. Archie Watson's up there. He obviously had Bradsall win the Coventry last year. He's had a lot of smart two-year-olds over the years. Soldier's Call was top draw. Out of the Stars is his horse this year. I've actually seen cheap pieces going on for the first time, which is probably ringing a bit of an alarm bell. But I thought she did quite well at Kempton on her first start. She completely missed the break. She was odds-on favourite for her debut. There's obviously ability there she's been showing at home. But she completely missed the break at Kempton. Stayed on really nicely in the end to get up in a slowly run race from an unpromising position, and she's about 25-1 with Rasheen Murphy on board. So that's the kind of horse I could see shortening, and you're going to be getting a lot of place terms in this. So
yeah, I think one could come in at a huge price here. I thought Out of the Stars was fascinating. Also thought Andrew Balding's run A Floor of Bermuda was interesting. I was very unlucky in the Hillary Needer Beverly just the other week, and James Dore takes the ride aboard that, obviously Oisin riding for Qatar Racing. Chris, it's hard to have a strong fancy in a race like this, but what angle have you taken?
I'm feeling a bit betrayed because I was warming up to Porta Fortuna and then they haven't declared her. She had another entry, I guess. Maybe they're going for the Albany with her. I'll keep it simple. You know, Got to love a graze, top in the speed figures. You know, got a really good figure for the winning the Marygate, which was quite similar conditions to how I think this is going to be, quick ground, 5 furlongs. You know, she was really resolute, comes from connection to, you know, absolutely know the time of day for this kind of race. And available at 9/10 to 1, which slightly surprises me. You know, given the quality that she's already shown, I'd have her shorter than that.
Yeah, fair enough price. Jamie, have you got a strong opinion on the Queen Mary?
No strong opinion. Relief Rally was probably my pick at the prices at 14s. That form with Gaydon looks pretty decent, and Gaydon is the pick of the hand and horses here. So probably Relief Rally, but not a strong selection.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the panel have got much of a strong opinion on the Queen Mary, and it is a very difficult race. Go on to the 3:40, where hopefully the panel do have a fair opinion, which is the Duke of Cambridge Stakes on the Wednesday. It's a Group 2 event for the fillies and mares. Over a mile, current market time recording, Jumbly 9/4, Prosperous Voyage is 5s, Grand Dam's 12/1, Rogue Millennium 12/1, Honey Girl 14/1, 20/1. Bar these, who are you with in this Group 2, Chris?
Well, you can't really see fairer than an unpenalised Group 1 winner, can you? So, you know, that would be Prosperous Voyage. Mm. And, you know, I would have thought she'd be favourite. I'm not quite getting why Jumbly's ahead of her. Maybe you guys can talk me through it, but yeah, she would do for me.
Yeah, I think, look, 5/1 could be fair enough with Frankie on board. Do we think that Robbie Jumbly's the favourite in here? We think this horse can take another step forward from the current. The fact this horse has moved from Harry and Roger Charlton to Joseph O'Brien, we just expect this horse to
yeah, basically, massively. I do quite like Jumbly. I try my best to explain to Chris why she's favourite. But, well, I mean, horses, Joseph O'Brien takes a lot of horses and makes them much better. He's done the same with Honey Girl this year. He took off Henry de Bromhead. Certainly on RPRs, she's improved a fair bit already on her first start for O'Brien, which is clearly a warm-up for this. The current Group 2 behind the race fit mare, Just Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, she's done it at Ascot before. She won over the mile here on the straight track last July, purchased by Top Connections, Ryan Moore aboard. That's, I mean, she is the kind of horse that you'd be more expecting to be 4/1, to be fair. The sort of value's probably dried up a bit, but I'm not sure this is a great race, to be honest. I think she's pretty solid. I've never been a massive Prosperous Voyage fan. I'm not sure that Epsom form's up to too much. And she obviously caught in Spiral completely under par in Spiral when she beat her at Newmarket. I thought Rogue Millennium's interested me in supplementing for this. She stays further. She's going to be staying on strongly over the mile. But yeah, they're the two for me.
There you go. Jamie, Robbie's made. Go on, Chris, sorry.
You see on the prices there, I think that 5/1 might have been for Prosperous Voyage, might have been when Laurel was still in the race. I don't think we'll be getting
that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I've refreshed my screen, Chris, and yeah, we're talking more sort of 11/4, 3/1. So,
yeah, but I mean, even that would be fine. Quick ground is the key to Prosperous Voyage, isn't it? I think that's what's going to help her. If you know, if that rain turns up like the Norwegians are expecting, then you know, it's a different game.
Yeah, completely missed Laura out of the market there, 11/4, with Frankie on board there. Jamie, Robbie's made a good case there for Jumbly and explained why this horse is the favourite for this race. Are you going to be taking what's now 2/1?
No, I'm going to be rowing in with Chris. I think Prosperous Voyage is, in the sort of great words of just don't overthink it. You know, like ultimately she won a Group 1. She's unpenalised for that. She won last time out when Rafe Beckett described her as matronly. Which I quite liked. She's just clearly takes a bit more getting fit than he kind of expected. And she ran like a horse that would come on for it. And I think ultimately, if you're getting her anything other than Fav, I think she's a bet. Like Chris says, small concern if the rain does come. But, you know, she'll still handle good ground. You know, it's not like she needs it absolutely rattling. She's the faster the better, but she would still handle it. And I think she's got a few pounds in hand on all of these. So Prosperous Voyage for me, she'll probably be my stable star on the day, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I'm just hoping we do get a good ground Ascot. I don't want to see any soft in the going because it can ruin your study completely. Let's go to the final race that we look at then in part one of the postcast, which is the Prince of Wales Stakes, 4:20 over a mile and a quarter. And Adeyar, this is the updated markets, are just slowly filtering through. Adeyar's the 9/4 favourite, Luxembourg 5/2, Bay Bridge is 4/1 along with My Prospero. Mostardaf is 25/1, and Classic Causeway is a 100 to one shot. Another absolute corker here, even with the six runners, Robbie. Who are you going to be with?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be with Adair. I just feel Charlie Appleby is just playing catch-up last year with him. He didn't appear until September. He was obviously, he had his problems, didn't he? But I feel like he just looked, you know, back to something like his best when beating Anmart on his return. Anmart's come out and won a Group 1. I think he's going to be fine over the 10 furlongs. I think he's got plenty of speed. And, I mean, his King George win here is probably by far the best form in this lineup. I don't think it's a great Prince of Wales is at all. I think he's the best horse in the race, the biggest engine, and I think he's the one to beat.
Do you think he's better over a mile and a half?
I think he's just versatile. I think he's got the speed for that. He can stay a bit further. I think he's one of the best horses around. I'd be actually fairly bullish considering it's pretty open.
Okay, Adair for Robbie. Chris, any agreement there?
No, I think a mile and a quarter for him, fair enough, if there was a bit of cut. But on quick ground over a mile and a quarter, I think that's going to be a test of speed that Adair just doesn't quite have. I'd rather go with Mike Prospero, who was, you know, in a top-class mile race the last time. Didn't have the pace for that, but another two furlongs. You know, I think this is going to be right up his alley. You know, ran a big race in the Champion Stakes at the end of last year. I think quicker ground is good news for him. He just hasn't had a chance over a mile two on a fast surface. He was only beaten a neck in the St James's Palace last year, and okay, that was a bit of a blanket finish. And he was hanging left in the closing stages because I think really he wasn't quite comfortable going that sort of clip and that kind of company. But this will be slightly different, and I think it will really suit him. And the Haggis team has sort of come right in the last few weeks after a slow start to the year. You know, he's interesting.
Yeah, my Prospero currently a 4-1 shot for the Prince of Wales. Jamie, you can make a case for plenty of these in here. Make the case for your selection.
Yeah, it's Robbie might have a point around is there a proper superstar in here? Probably not. But it also is one that I cannot wait for this race. It because of those front four in the market, I reckon I fancied all of them for this race at some point this year. however, I'm just on the balance, going to side with Luxembourg. I was so impressed by his defeat of Baybridge last time, where people reckon that, you know, if Baybridge has got maybe a slightly different ride, I don't know. I think Luxembourg was going away at the line. I think he has more in hand than he showed that day. My Prospero would have been the one that I would against the most of these four all the way up until about a week ago, when I started just to sort of come round to the idea of him stepping up in trip, having been a top-class miler, as Chris says, and ultimately, if this turns into a bit of a speed test, he's probably got the most turf of the lot. So all that to say is I don't have a bloody clue.
Honestly, yeah, look, I haven't helped the listeners out too much there because we've given three completely different selections in a six-runner race. So it is a really fascinating contest, definitely a really good watching brief, really looking forward to seeing the Prince of Wales. Now, that's part one of the podcast done and dusted. Hold on for just 10 seconds and we'll get the panel's opinions on days three and four.
Play Tote Fantasy on three of the first 4 days of Royal Ascot and get a free go on Saturday. Pick seven horses and add your boosts for your chance to win cash prizes. Who's in your stable? Visit tote.co.uk/fantasy. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back to the Racing Postcast, brought to you by Tote Fantasy. Sam Hart alongside Robbie Wilders, Chris Cook and Jamie Benson, trying to find you those festival winners. We move on to day three now on the Thursday, and we start off with the opener. We had to preview this because this is a really fascinating race. The Norfolk Stakes, 5 furlongs, Group 2 contest, and Elite Status tops the market at 13-8. American Rascal for the Wesley Ward team is 3-1. Sadna probably isn't going to go here, but it's 8-1. 10-1 about Johannes Brahms. No Name Metz, another American Raider, is 10-1. Noche Magica is 10-1. 14-1. And bigger, the rest of them in here. Robbie, I'll start with you. Top two at the market. You might fancy something at a prize, but the top two, who would you be with?
I mean, Elite Status has the best form, doesn't he? That National Stakes win at Sandown was just a brilliant performance. But again, it just goes against the grain for me to be taking a skinny price in a big field juvenile race. So I'd rather just see him win. But then finding something to beat him is going to be difficult. I was looking at Zabriskie Point potentially for Charlie Hills, another very good trainer with two-year-olds. And the Archie Watson horse, Revelia, who did it nice first time out. This is his only entry. He's not got the Windsor Castle one, so he should be running here. But I think it's probably a race I'll leave, to be honest.
You're going to leave the race alone. No problem at all, especially with this Wesley Ward potential rocket in there. Chris, I know you like your American racing. What do we make of American Rascal's sole performance at Keeneland back in April?
Yeah, he looked quick. That's about the length and breadth of it. I mean, it's always worth interesting to Wesley Ward, isn't it, for Royal Ascot, because I think, he's very straight and he tries to give you, genuine insight. And he's been very clear that American Rascal is the one from his team this year. And as a conditions, isn't it? Quick ground, that gives his speed balls a real chance. All that being said, the last winning favourite in the Norfolk Stakes was 15 years ago, which, if you need a bucket of water to calm yourself down when you're getting too excited about one of these pops in the race, that should do it, right? Howard Johnson was the last trainer to have a favourite win the Norfolk Stakes. So there's some perspective for you. I thought the fixer was interesting. French horse, and therefore sailing below the radar like so many French raiders do at Royal Ascot. I like the Shanti performance last time. There are a couple of quality Brits in third and fourth that suggest he's actually not far off the required level for this. And you're getting sort of 20, 25 to 1. That'll be the one. I mean, you have to sort of wait because you can never be quite sure until they're declared if these French horses are actually going to turn up. But, Mikkel Barcelone has actually got his name next to the horse in the race card. So it's looking positive. And he's got plenty of experience, that horse. He's had four runs as well, which I think will help. So that's where I'd be looking.
Yeah, the fixer 25 to 1. Barcelone already jocked up for Graffard in the Norfolk. Jamie, UK or USA? French.
Ireland.
Ireland.
Noche Magica, who could be, This is his only entry, so I'm hoping he goes here. But basically, he was second to Give Me the Beat Boys, beating the head last time out when favourite in the Marble Hill, and Give Me the Beat Boys has come in for massive support in the Coventry. He's now into the 4-1, and if he goes in, then Noche Magica could be backed right off the boards. He's sort of around the 10-1 mark at the moment, and I think that is absolutely a bet. The draw here will be interesting because you obviously probably want to be drawn near wherever American Rascal is, because we'll go off like a scalded cat and then come home with his tail between his legs. It would be Noche Magica for me. I'm still, this might be a question for Chris. What's the difference between the Norfolk and the Windsor Castle, other than the penalty structure slightly different? I can't understand why there's two-year-old 5-furlong races.
Yeah, it makes no sense, does it? It's just like there's the Wolfton and the Prince of Wales Stakes, like it's the same race.
I think it's just because there's so many 5-furlong juvenile speedsters around, aren't there? And so they want to give people a chance. You've got the Norfolks for the quality ones, or the ones that are theoretically quality anyway, and then the Windsor Castle is where you sort of maybe sneakily drop in class with your horse that you think has got a chance.
Perfect. I'd say I'd just run 40 of them in one race.
Carnage, wouldn't it? It is a fascinating Norfolk, it really is, but it's a race where, look, might be cautious taking the two favourites at the top there, but it could turn up into a bit of a burn-up between the two of them. Let's move on to a race that I can't wait to see this filly turn up in, the Ribblesdale. It's the 3:40 for the fillies, Group 2 over a mile and a half, and the current market, we've got Our Seaver as the 4-5 favourite, obviously supplemented just a couple of days ago. Infinite Cosmos is 11-2, Blue Stocking 7-1, Be Happy 14s, Azazat 16-1, 16-1 also about Lumiere Rock, Midnight Mile and 20-1 and bigger. The rest, we want to see the best horses turn up at Royal Ascot, and fair play to Shabwell and the Goslins for supplementing Our Seaver and saying they're going to strike while the iron's hot. Now, Robbie Wilders, the anti-postman Wilders, two horses put up for this race, and Village Voice at a big price and Midnight Mile at a massive price. You've still got the shorter in the betting for what you had, but I bet you didn't imagine this horse to turn up.
Yeah, that wound me up, Sam. We like to see the best horses, but I don't like to see all supplementing and get put in as an odds-on favourite. It's making the job much harder, because I was looking at Ribblesdale thinking there's not really a standout, I'll go for a couple of big prices, but I mean, she just looks a bit of a monster.
Yeah. Do you think she is just she's definitely one for people, if people like short prices for the trebles?
Yeah,
and doubles.
I mean, she's got every chance, isn't she? I wouldn't be playing her because it's a quick enough turnaround as well. But I think out of the two, Midnight Mile, it's
you liked her, didn't you?
I did like her. I mean, she's by no name never, but there's loads of stamina on the dam side, and she sort of gives the impression to me that she'd be all right over a mile and a half. Eye catcher on the Musa Dora, she's pretty closely matched with Infinite Cosmos on that form. Very good juvenile as well. I think Village Voice is the bet still now. Jess Carrington obviously won this last year with Magical Lagoon. I think it's going to be a better renewal this year than it was last year. But Village Voice won the same race Magical Lagoon won En Route to Run Near. It was always the plan to come to the Ribblesdale first time out. Just think she's sort of been forgotten about. I think a lot of Jess Carrington's horses do get underestimated at Royal Ascot. She's well capable of having winners there. And Village Voice can still be back at 20-1, so even with Alasifa. I mean, I'll wait till Dex,
absolutely,
because you probably get four places there. I think we're probably looking at now potentially about 14 runners or so. I could be wrong. But yeah, I'll stick with Village Voice at the moment.
Yeah, Village Voice 20-1 currently. Ronan Whelan dropped up on board. And there's probably two ways to play this in the Tote Fantasy game, and I'll speak to Jamie about that in just a second. Chris, do you think Alasifa has won the banks of the meeting showing what she did at Goodwood a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to put a line through this race. I think I'm going to give it to her, but 11-8 on already. You know, you can't find something better to do with your money than that. Then you're not really using your imagination, I think. I mean, Robbie's point is interesting. It's only 11 days after her last run, and you know, for a middle distance horse, that can catch you out. So yeah, I'll just pretend this race isn't happening and get a study on for the next one.
Yeah, just I'm looking forward to seeing her run and hoping that she could be quite a special horse. Jamie, like I said, there's a couple of ways you could play. She's bound to be probably what, 4,000 guineas purchase in the game come Thursday, and you either, if you are going to fancy this horse and you're going to build your team around this horse on the Thursday, you're going to have to stable star, and it's the best way you're going to do it. But the other way to play it is try and find something that could hit the frame and stewards inquiry it, which would mean you boost it up a place and get the points for horse above. I mean, how would you be playing it on the day?
Yeah, spot on. I mean, Village Voice makes obvious appeal as that sort of horse that, you know, is she a proper Group 1 horse? You know, no. But ultimately, and Alasifa is probably that Group 1 horse in a Group 2. So yeah, she probably goes and wins. But if you have Village Voice coming second or third, you know, you put your stewards inquiry on that, you'll get the winner, you'll get the points for winning or coming second. So I think that's a really interesting play, which then free up loads of budget elsewhere in the card. But I reckon Alasifa will be 5,000 guineas.
Five.
So she'll be half of your budget, which will leave you with 5,000 for the remaining six races. So you'll be picking rags and everything else. I mean, I totally agree with Robbie on the 11-day turnaround. I thought she was an absolute rocket, and I think I texted you, Sam, afterwards, and I was like, this horse will not be beaten this year. But if she is going to be beaten over a mile four with an 11-day turnaround, when they win like that, they look like they haven't taken anything out of themselves. But she clearly, you can't not take something out of yourself when you win like that, because it was such a monster performance. And you know, it's her third start, having only made her racecourse debut sort of, you know, 4.5 weeks before this will be run. So, you know, for a 4-5 shot, there's plenty of question marks, I'd say, other than the fact that she looks a superstar. So
I'll just add in as well, her being submitted has pushed out the price of Blue Stocking, who I thought should have been favourite for this before. You're going to get bigger about her. I mean, she shaped by far the best horse in the new breed trial last time. It was only her second start. She's obviously always been highly talked about, but it was very slowly run, and she was held up last, and she did remarkably well to get as close as she did, and she's had a little much longer break between runs. So to be fair, I mean I don't think you could say at this point that Alasifa is necessarily better than Blue Stocking. So I'm going to change my mind live and put up Blue Stocking.
Okay. I mean, look, you can play the horse to win, you can play the horse in the without market, but you never know. People playing the play spot might be hoping they can get something big prize. No power. Sefer does struggle with a quick turnaround, and she's out of the placings. That'll really boost the play spot, Paul, I'd imagine. So, yeah, really looking forward to seeing her. She's going to be, hopefully a superstar, and she's very short. I think she's around 12-1 for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe at the moment, which is awfully short at this moment in time. I mean, if she does go and bolt up here, she's going to get even shorter and go single-figure odds. But we will wait and see on Thursday. She'll go on to the feature then on Thursday, which is the 4:20. It's the 2.5-mile Gold Cup, a Group 1, part of the British Champion Series. And Coltrane and Eldar Eldaroff top the market at 3-1. Emily Dickinson is 7-1. Courage Mon Ami, Subjectivist and Yabir all 10-1, 12-1 about Broom, and 14-1 about the rest of them. It may not be the strongest Gold Cups, but it's certainly open. Chris, the floor's yours. Who wins this?
Yeah, I think Courage Mon Ami is still sailing below some radars. Hopefully he's still available at 10-1. I have the impression that you know, as the week goes on and people start to twig that there's this unbeaten Gosden de Tory thing in the Gold Cup, his price is going to tumble. You could easily see him starting 5-1, maybe even shorter than that. It's obviously a big step up in class. But I was just talking to Rab Havlin yesterday about him. Rab's ridden him in all his races so far. And he's saying, you know, you'd have to be really impressed with what he did at Goodwood because they didn't go a strong pace. And in the end, he said he's had to put his foot flat to the floor for, you know, the last four furlongs. And, you know, the horses kept going the whole way. He said it takes a proper stayer to be able to sustain their effort at the end of a race like that for a full half mile. And he was never stronger, really, than at the finish. So, yeah, I think probably that's where the juice lies. It looks like a Gold Cup without a standout talent. Elderov and Coltrane sort of earned the right to be at the top of the betting. Mm-hmm. But you don't really get the impression from either of them that they're going to go on and be a standout talent.
Yeah, Cara's Mon Ami beat the Goodwood legend stayer Gaggio last time. That horse always seems to hit the frame, but won that fairly comfortably. And like we said, there could be plenty of improvements still to come with this horse. Robbie, I've had a look at this race for ages, and although my original selection, I have to mention it, was El Habib for this race at a big price, that horse has been taken out. But Subjectivist at double figures does stand out. He was he was the best stayer in the world a couple of years back, wasn't he? And look, he went to Saudi. I think he took a step forward when he ran at Maidan. If they can get him anywhere near his best, surely he's got to be like there or thereabouts, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. It's just the problem. That is the issue, isn't it? Yeah. Otherwise, you'd be taking 10-1 any day of the week. I mean, he was so impressive in it. And he's only three starts back. He's not got that much mileage on the clock, but I don't know. I mean, I would, certainly wouldn't put anyone off having a sort of chance in that at 10-1. But I don't really like Coltrane. I feel like he's been sort of running a similar level to a faltering Trushan, a horse that's on the wane. That might have flattered him a bit. He's only beaten Wise Eagle 4.5 lengths and the Cigaro. I don't think he should be. I think Eldorado should be favourite, to be honest. I much prefer a sort of improving 4-year-old to an improving 6-year-old. His comeback at York in the Yorkshire Cup under a £5 penalty was just absolutely full of promise. He obviously won the Queen's Vase here last year. I think he could be the one to take the division by storm, and I think he's probably the best horse in the race.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Jamie, how have you looked at this race?
To be honest, Sam, I'm with you, Subjectivist, for all the reasons that you laid out in terms of which of these has the highest ceiling and the best proven form for me as Subjectivist. Eldorov could yet reach those heights, but you're taking it on trust that he's going to improve from his debut set, from his seasonal reappearance second. And for me, Subjectivist, I never really mind horses coming back off a long layoff because people often question their fitness, but I think quite often they would have done loads of work at home because you worry that they, if you go in 80%, that they will then do something, whereas actually you want to sort of slowly test them more and more at home to make sure that they're sound before you then take them to a race course. So I'm happy enough to take a chance at 10-1 that Subjectivist is back to that form he showed when winning this race in 2021. And I think that's good enough to win it again this year.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if any money comes for the horse on the day as well. That'd be a positive sign if it was to come, and be lovely to see him come back, wouldn't it, with the Charlie Johnson Yard, who were in absolutely flying form leading up to Royal Ascot. Usually expect them to be in fine form leading up to Glorious Goodwood, but they're flying into Ascot. So yeah, I'd love to see Subjectivist run well at 10-1. Let's move on to Friday's card then, and we kick things off with the 305, which is the King Edward VII Stakes, a mile and a half here, Group 2 contest, and King of Steel is the 7-4 favourite. Castle Way, 7-1. Continuous is 8-1. Circle of Fire, 10-1. Military Order is 10-1. 12-1 about Canberra Legend, Arrest, and Tower of London, and 16-1 and bigger the rest in here. It looks like Derby second, King of Steel will go for this race. Would he be for you, Robbie, if he turns up?
Yeah, it's been a lot of money for him, hasn't there? Well, I think he's obviously got the best form, hasn't he? He almost beat August Rodin, and they weren't. It seemed like they're annoyed he actually got beat, which seems quite surprising for such a lightly raced horse at 66-1. So I mean, there's obviously a massive engine there. Whether he can replicate that run next time, I mean, he could feasibly sort of get better from that Epsom run. He's only run 3 times. We're talking about a very, very good horse. I think, yeah, probably. But I'm also interested in Artistic Fire for Rafe Beckett, who Oh, sorry, he's called Artistic Star, the gentleman. He was seventh at Epsom, but he was sort of shuffled back at a crucial stage. I'm not sure he was completely in love with the track. There's a lot of ability. He's actually he's a very late foal. He was the youngest horse in that race in the Derby. I think I could see him running quite a big race and hitting the frame at a nice price. But King of Steel is obviously the one to beat.
Yeah, Artistic Star currently 16-1, an each way angle from Robbie there. Chris, who are you? Well, are you looking to take on the favourite?
Yeah, I think you've got to, don't you? I mean, this is that classic case where if you weren't on King of Steel each way in the Derby at 66-1, you missed the wedding. Do not be turning up promptly for the funeral and lumping on at 6-4 the next time, because I mean, I haven't done the stats on this, but I think if you took as a group all the horses that placed at big odds in the Derby and the Oaks and then turned up at a short price at Royal Ascot 2 or 3 weeks later, you know, I think that would be, you'd be looking at sort of monumental total loss. He might just be a class horse who's on his way through. But the value is not there. Castleway is the interesting one. You'd have to have reservation about Charlie Appleby's three-year-olds. This year so far, they have not been cutting the mustard, but I suspect that's a temporary state of affairs. And he was quite good in the Newmarket Stakes, which is the last time you saw him. Half-brother to Palace Pier, probably got unexplored potential. Quite a lot of upside at 6-1. Wouldn't be a confident bet, but that's the way I'm looking.
Yeah, Castleway 6-7-1 roughly. Jamie, have you got a strong opinion on this one?
I'm willing to give Canberra Legend another chance. He just wasn't himself in the Dante. He missed the start and never really got into the race. I think he's always looked to stay at the sort of 10 furlong trips. So I think the step up to a mile and a half is going to suit him down to the ground. I know the James Ferguson yard have always liked him. I mean, they're a fair bullish yard now, so I think you take it with a pinch of salt always. But yeah, I'd be willing to give him another chance. They've clearly just given him a bit of time after Dante to just freshen him up a little bit, because they weren't quite sure what had gone wrong. But if he's back to the form of beating Colsai half length when staying on over a trip much shorter of this, I think the Sun of Australia is probably a decent bet at 12-1 in this.
Okay, Jamie Ferguson's horse for Jamie. Let's go on to the 4:20 then. The Commonwealth Cup Group 1 six furlong contest for the three-year-olds here, and Little Big Bear tops the market for Aidan O'Brien team, 13-8. Sakir 7-2, Lazoo 10-1, Shaquille is also 10-1. That's a big price. Noble Style is 12-1. Whether they come here or go to the Jersey, it's wait to be seen. Ocean Quest is 14-1 and 20-1 and bigger about the rest of the field here. Little Big Bear, a lot of people's bankers of the meeting. Look, now a 13-8 favourite. Chris, do you see him as a tough horse to beat, or can you find some faults?
Yeah, he's a quality animal, but that was a very funny looking race the last, wasn't it? I mean, you had the suspicion that he was racing in the right part of the track and some other horses have just not produced their efforts. He's the type of horse that, you know, I can't ever be on, because his reputation precedes him to the extent where he's never a bigger price than he should be, is he? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought Aldassin was the interesting one. Was he like 20-1? When I was looking the other day, I'll just check that's still there. Yeah, there's still bits of 20, maybe even 25-1. So this is a George Bowie horse that showed a lot of improvement in Dubai in the early spring and has not been seen since the end of March. Possibly people are forgetting about him because he was well held in the Alcross Sprint, but he was a three-year-old in that, the only three-year-old in the race. I don't think the race has ever been won by a three-year-old. It was actually a really respectable effort. You know, so he's coming in here, as I say, a little bit under the radar because folks have forgotten about him. He's too big, but it's probably an each way bet because, you know, you wouldn't be confident. I think Lazoo is maybe overpriced as well. Similar thing, you know, a mile the last time on a bit of cut didn't suit. You know, she couldn't show her quality, but, you know, her form from last year is very strong. I'm sure she'll run a big race.
Yeah, some people do forget about the maiden form. I remember when the maiden form, I know a lot of people when the Godolphin horse, was it Real World, won at Ascot a massive price. That horse that all the formers just completely forgot about from maiden and ended up winning at a huge price at Ascot, not in this race, but you've got to take note of it. And Aldassim is absolutely fascinating. Robbie, loads of focus on Little Big Bear, but Sakir and Shaquille, they do deserve plenty of respect.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a pretty deep race. I definitely wouldn't be taking the short price about a Little Big Bear. I mean, he was produced the standout 2-year-old performance last year at the Curragh. I'm not saying he's necessarily back just yet because, I mean, he's obviously favoured by where he raced at Haydock. He's only beaten should have been a ring, sort of length and a half. That's sort of horse gets beaten in every race he runs in, it seems. And yeah, I'm just not sure. I just wouldn't take that price. I think there's a fair bit of depth. Obviously, the two horses dropping back in Trip Noble Style and Sakira are interesting. They've got big engines, but the horse that definitely should be shorter is Ocean Quest for me. Mm. Another Jess Carrington horse that's been a bit underestimated. Colin Keane's been booked. She absolutely pummeled a couple of Ballydoyle smart horses. The Antarctic and Aesop's failed. Fables on her return at Navan. Proved that was on heavy. Proved she handles a quicker service when the Antarctic admittedly beat her, but he was quite lucky too, I thought. Everything unfolded on the far side. Ocean Quest was stand side. The way she finished suggested that she was by far the best horse in that race. And, you know, lightly race filly, handles whatever the ground is going to be and should be more to come. So 14-1, I think, is a cracking value.
No, I agree. I think it's a cracking each way betting here with Colin Keane taking the ride. Jamie, all in Little Big Bear.
Yeah, I think this has got stable style written all over it. You'll get a big field and so you'll get the bonus points for that. And yeah, I think he's a very, very worthy favourite. The preview that we did, Harry Finlay said he was value at anything odds against. I'm not sure my cojones are quite as chunky as Harry's. So I'll rather have him in my fantasy stable. And then maybe one against him or in some of the Whirlpool exotics, Shaquille, for lesser known connections, I think could go under the radar with two very impressive wins this year, including over a horse I really like called Washington Heights. That was in a handicap, but then came out and bolted up in the listed race afterwards. I know the Camacho Yard think that he might be the best horse they've ever trained. So I would be keen to have him on side in the exotics, but a Little Big Bear looks to me a little big certainty.
A Little Big Bear, Shaquille, a potential each way angle in the race as well. Let's move on to the final race that we can look at on the postcards. Remember, we have got a Friday show coming your way where we will be previewing the Saturday racing. So this will be the final race we're previewing. It's the 5 o'clock on Friday. It's the 1 mile Coronation Stakes Group 1 contest. Tahira is the 4-5 favourite. Morge is 10-3. Queen for You, 7-1. Meditate, 15-2. Sounds of Heaven, 12-1. 25-1 and bigger about the other four in here. Absolute belter this, Robbie. How do we see it? Does it revolve around the English 1,000 guineas 1 and 2, or can we throw the Irish guineas second, Meditate, into the mix?
I don't like Meditate, no. I mean, she's done well to get closer to Tahira, but I just think Tahira is just the best horse in the race. I think Queen for You might actually end up being close to that sort of level. I just think this might come a little bit too soon in her development. She's looked really good in two starts so far. Unlucky loser at York last time. But I think she's a Group 1 winner waiting to happen, but I don't think it's going to be yet. I think Tahira's the here and now horse. I think just a lack of match practice caught her out in the guineas at Newmarket. Obviously, her and Morge pulled well clear. Morge was fighting fit from racing in Maidan. She's come out, obviously, since. And I don't think she's probably at quite her best at the Curragh, but I think this stiff test is really going to suit her. And she looks a very rock-solid favourite to me. I would be pretty surprised if she was beaten, but I'm going to say further down the line that I think Queen for You is going to be going places.
Okay, yeah, no, one to keep note of then, Queen for You. Watch that run under Rav Havlin. Chris, 4-5. Robbie said, look, it's a fair enough price. It's going to be tough to beat. Should she simply be taking this?
No, that doesn't sound like the kind of advice I would ever line up. Yes, it's a hot race, and I always enjoy the Coronation Stakes. I mean, it's so often you know really interesting competitive stuff. I thought Mama's Girl was a potential source of value. Similar thinking to Indestructible, really. You know, impressive at the Craven meeting, bombed out completely in the guineas, and so folk have just gone, oh, she's no good. But you know, you go back and look at that Nell Gwynn run. I remember I was watching her that day because you know I fluked a little bet on her, and she was just struggling to see a bit of daylight, and she finally got room to run just as the camera panned away from her, and I was like, well, what's happening now, you know? And then a little bit like Zafonic, she sort of ran into the shot with the cameraman not even paying attention to her. Very impressive performance. Maybe the form isn't all that strong, but I think soft ground the next time was a complete excuse, and she'll be more interesting on fast ground this time. You know, if she finishes strongly like she did in Nell Gwynn, then maybe Tahira backers will have something to worry about in the final furlong. Each way, 25-1, not a bad way to go.
Yeah, no, okay, no, it's fair to have an each way shout in a race like this, especially, well, look, hoping we can get eight runners in here and we can get the free places.
Easy. Yeah.
Jamie, another hot purchase, I'd imagine, on the Friday. And here, probably again, half the budget, maybe. Who's the selection?
Yeah, absolutely. She'll be 5,000 guineas, I'm sure. And I'm willing to take her on at that. Morge would not be near the top of my list. I think that was a brutal race at Newmarket. And although she's had a bit of time to get over it, I'm happy to take a chance on one. And I'm going to take a chance on Meditate. I get all reasons why you would poo-poo her on form chance, on form, but I'm just kind of having a small bit of a Aidan O'Brien moment and just going, like, with these fillies, he just gets them to keep improving, even when they look unbelievably exposed and the conditions aren't really that different. He does seem to eke out some improvement. I think good ground at Ascot's going to be right up her street. And I just think it's sort of 7-8-1 versus the 4-5 to Hera for the length and a bit difference at... at the Curragh, I'm willing to take a chance on her, and I think she's going to be banged there. She looks reasonably bomb-proof as well. So Meditate for me, but I do also like the Mama's Girl idea. As sort of previously mentioned, I'm always quite willing to forgive one run, especially in these younger horses. And if you do that, then the 25-1 about her looks massive. So Meditate for me, but I do like Chris's angle on Mama's Girl.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The Mama's Girl angle, I think, we've mentioned a few, Indestructible as well, a big price for the Ammo Racing team. We'll have to see how they get on during the meeting, especially with King of Steel, the favourite in the King Edward VII. We end part two there. We'll move on to the final part in just a second. We've got the gents' thoughts on the first 4 days, but let's see if they've got any other selections shortly after this.
Win without backing a winner. In 2022, the Ascot Placebot returned an average of £4,172 to a £1 stake. There's a minimum of £500,000 to be won in the Tote Placebot every day of Royal Ascot. Play at tote.co.uk. T's and C's apply.
Thanks for joining us back for the final part of the Racing Postcast with Tote Fantasy, Sam Hart, Robbie Wilders, Chris Cook and Jamie Benson guiding you through the first 4 days of Royal Ascot. Remember, we've got the show on Friday previewing Saturday's racing, so do tune in to that. Let's see who else the panel like on the opening 4 days then, without giving your best bets away, gentlemen. Chris, I'll start with you. Who else do you like on the cards?
Yeah, just been going through the day one card. There's a couple of big field handicaps at the end, which is great fun to get stuck into. And Ian Williams is always a trainer, I think, who can get one ready for these races. He's got Zinc White down at the bottom of the weights in the Ascot Stakes. I think he's got the Grand Vizier also in the race. He might attract a bit more attention because he did win the race a few years back. But he's 9 years old now. Zinc White, relatively new to the yard, improved performance to win at Chester when last seen. In the style of a horse that's got more to offer. So I think Zinc White's interesting, the 5 o'clock. And then the last race in the card, 10 past six on Tuesday, the Copper Horse Handicap. It's a mile six. Chillingham from the Ed Bethel stable. This is only going to be his third run in a handicap. I'm not sure that people even now have caught on to how much better Ed Bethel's year is going than either of the two seasons he's had up to now. He's a really interesting young trainer, and his horse is flying. I think Chillingham, hopefully he's going to run a big race at like 20-1, something like that.
There you go, a few prices for the opening day there. For Chris, Robbie Wilders, you said you studied every race. Give us a couple.
That's quite amazing what Chris has just said there, because I've written the previews for the Ascot Stakes and Cop Horse, and I gave a good shout to Zinc White and Chillingham. Yeah, Chillingham is only rated... He's only rated 97. He's entered the Irish St Ledger as well. I thought it was quite interesting. Just got a really nice profile, and the fact that he's trained by Ed Bethel means he's going to be underestimated. On a world pool day, I don't mind that at all. Zinc White, he won the Chester Plate from stall 13, I believe. He sort of beat Novel Legend fair and square. He's a big talking horse into that. Just Ian Williams is mustard in these staying races. So they'd be two I'm looking at for the open day. But my probably best bet at the open day, I'd say, is Buckaroo in the Wolfton Stakes. He's got a £3 penalty, but I just think this is a Group 1 horse, really. Certainly looked that way when he reeled in Homeless Songs, the Irish Guineas winner, on his return over a mile. I think a mile is the minimum he needs. And then he sort of went quite close in a very bunch finish to the pre-Dispan. I think he's going to relish his step up to 1 mile 2 again. and he's going to take quite a bit of beating in that, and the field size of the Wolverton means you're going to get an each way price, I'd say.
Okay, yeah, no, I was very interested in Buckaroo, and I got a little nod from Jamie as you mentioned the horse as well. But Jamie, it is a busy week. Are there any other races that you want to give a mention to?
Yeah, Buckaroo was on the sort of long list of things to punt, but others that I'll just drop a quick word for. He might need a little bit more rain, but I think Tritonic is a very well handicapped horse as a stayer on the flat off 100. He's about 25-1 in the 5 o'clock tomorrow in the Ascot Stakes, and he was second in over mile two in a handicap at Ascot back in the day. That was off a mark of 95. You know, he's still well handicapped off 100, I'd say. Then in the Royal Hunt Cup, which we love, I won't be alone in fancying Astro King. He's 12-1 for the Kooblers. His run last time out in what will go down as the King's Cut double of this and Passenger running into the back of everything on the Knavesmire. He obviously looks well handicapped off 99, and this would have been a plan all year. And then there was one other. Carla's Way. Mm. Carla's Way, who just. I loved, absolutely loved her win last time out. She looked like she had loads more to come, was keen, but still hit the line well. And I think she is an absolute stonking bet in the, I need to find the time.
The Albany Stakes at 2:30 on 2:30? Friday. Yeah. Okay, we'll get on to Naps in a minute. I'll give her a mention. But at the moment, everyone's been waiting for on the podcast. What are the best bets from the panel for the opening 4 days of Royal Ascot? Chris Cook, who's the Nap going to be?
My Prospero in the Prince of Wales, I think.
Yep, 4-1 in the Prince of Wales. Chris, Robbie, your Nap?
I'm going to Nap up Ocean Quest in the Commonwealth Cup.
Okay, yeah, I think 14-1 is a fair price about that. I'm going to put a horse up. I know that Jamie's just mentioned it and Graham Robway's napped it for the week as well. But Carla's Way, I think, is a really, really good bet. The second, I think, Star of Mystery went and absolutely bolted up by 11 lengths at Haydock just the other day, and the fourth that day with Miss Roberts, who ran close to Jabara, who is well fancied in the market here as well for the varying yards. So I think the form all stacks up. This horse was around 7-8-1 earlier in the week. He's been absolutely hammered in. James Dawe spoke so highly about this for the Crisfords. I think that horse will be winning the Albany. And Jamie, your Nap of the week will be?
Well, I'll give you a chance to say I won't Nap up Carla's Way.
Are we going to?
I was thinking about it, but now we actually want it to win, so I can't possibly do that. I'll Nap up, because I'm a sensible geese like that. I'm going to Nap up one in the Royal Hunt Cup and say Astro King wins the Royal Hunt Cup.
I agree, Jamie. That's a cracking shout, Astro King. He's got a massive chance.
Having a nap in the Royal Hunt Cup, exactly. But why not? And that's it for this week's racing postcards. Well, I say that, but we're back on Friday to preview Saturday's racing. We are going to have a Tote Fantasy team every day in our private league, the racing postcards team, along with Paul Keighley and David Jennings. We're going to put Robbie Wilds in charge and putting some selections in for our Tote
Cheers,
Fantasy
Matt.
Team during the week. So best of luck to Robbie. Remember to join that Tote Fantasy private league. Get involved during the week. There are plenty of different offers that Jamie mentioned at the top of the show, and you'll find all the information out on the Racing Post and Tote Fantasy socials. If you want to get involved in that Members Club competition to win a full year, you can do via the link in the description. Oh, and there we go. That's the show done and dusted.
Wow. Go for a lie down.
Yeah, big thanks to Chris Cook, Robbie Wilders, and of course, Mr. Tote Fantasy, Jamie Benson. Chris, any plans for the rest of the day leading up to tomorrow?
I've got about 5,000 words to write. So
We've kept you long enough, Chris. Robbie, your plans are probably to go to bed by the sound of it.
Yeah, didn't get too much sleep this weekend, Sam, and a lot of work to do, so we'll be writing plenty of words this afternoon.
Absolutely. And Jamie, your plan for the week, are you going to be heading to the course?
I'm there on the Tuesday, and then after that I'm taking it easy. I think I'm going to try and grab some of the Racing Post lads for some beers on Thursday evening. So if DJ's looking a bit rough come Friday morning, you'll know I've been successful.
There we go. Yeah, look, we'll have a few nice evenings here in the office watching Ascot, I'm sure. Join us again though this Friday, looking at Saturday's card. We'll hear our full fantasy team during that show. We'll actually run through the team on that show. And to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We wish you all the best with any bets you're having this week. Please gamble responsibly, and as always, enjoy the sport. We'll see you soon.